It's Monday, May 23rd, and forget weapons. This military mission is carrying something way more valuable. We start here. The U.S. loads up a C-17 with some of the nation's most precious cargo, baby formula.
They would have taken 3 weeks, and so they were able to get that process cut down to about 72 hours.
Who's going
to
get it, and how will this operation affect a nationwide shortage? Stop me if this sounds familiar. A dangerous virus is spreading faster than we can catch up with.
There's a cousin of smallpox and chickenpox.
What you need to know about monkeypox. And baseless claims of election fraud are no longer limited to races between Republicans and Democrats.
This is Republican on Republican violence over the issue of vote integrity.
What happens when former President Trump wants to stop the count in your Republican primary? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. There have been lots of shortages throughout the last couple of years. Toilet paper, semiconductors, still tough to buy a car. But none of these shortages have prompted as much anxiety as a parent feels when they can't feed their infant child.
It's scary. I mean, it's super scary. It's the only thing she can eat.
My husband's running to 3 or 4 different stores just trying to find something.
There simply aren't a ton of options for newborns. Cow's milk is tough for many babies to digest. Breast milk is great, but it's not possible for every mom to breastfeed. And certain medical conditions prevent some babies from taking breast milk, which leaves formula, if you can find it. Well, as a nationwide shortage has grown more and more dire, the U.S. government has gotten involved, to the point where yesterday a military plane had to carry hundreds of thousands of units of baby formula. Let's go to ABC's Faith Abube, who's been covering this from Washington. Faith, the last time I remember shipments this urgent, we were talking about like vaccines being delivered, life-saving stuff. How desperate have people become for this formula?
Well, parents are very, you know, they're panicked, they're anxious, they're frustrated with the whole process and what's been happening for weeks and weeks now.
Anytime that we're in the store, it's basically there could be one on the shelf and that's the only one that you can find, or there could be none at all.
You had a mom, Cheyenne, who I talked to over the weekend, and she has a 4-month-old, Odin, who has a severe allergy to cow milk protein and has a severe soy milk allergy as well. And she has been driving around, according to her, for 50 miles at a time, just going from store to store, trying to figure out where to find the right can of formula for her child.
So with a small child, you have to feed them every couple hours, and driving long distances is really hard.
So there are a lot of parents out there who are frustrated. They are worried about where their child's next meal is coming from, not necessarily because they don't have the money to pay for it, but because they just can't find the food to buy for their child.
Wow. And so then fast forward to this weekend, and what happened with this? It was like a military shipment, right?
Yeah. So what happened was this comes under Operation Fly Formula. That's what the Biden administration is calling it. President Biden directed the Department of Defense to go overseas and use a military aircraft to go and grab some of these formulas that were scheduled to come to the U.S. anyway, but they would have taken 3 weeks. And so they were able to get that process cut down to about 72 hours and bring that shipment here to the U.S.
We moved a lot of vaccines for Operation Warp Speed. Baby formula, this is probably a new one for us, but we're here to help.
They were able to deliver that first shipment. It came into Indiana Sunday morning. Soldiers at the Ramstein Air Base in Germany were able to pack the C-17 plane with 78,000 pounds of formula, and they dropped them in Indiana Sunday morning. And so now that the formula is stateside, they will be inspected to make sure that it is the right product. And then they will be shipped out to hospitals and medical facilities across the country, especially in these communities that have dire need. Some of these communities have nothing.
You can cut the desperation with a knife. Nothing else matters. The world stops until you find that formula.
The mayor of New York declared a state of emergency over the weekend for price gouging because of the formula shortage. But he also mentioned that 43% of the retailers in the tri-state area right now do not have formula in stock. So that is a huge number. And overall, When you look across the country, that number is at 45%. So this is a huge issue.
I was in the car today for 4 hours. The 7 stores I checked personally, none of them but one had my daughter's formula.
A lot of these communities across the country, they are in desperate need for this. And these hospitals and medical facilities will get the supply. In addition to that, some of this formula will also go to stores across the country.
Faith, I was interested. Like, does it just start showing up on your local grocery store, or are there restrictions as to who actually can get it?
So we're still trying to figure out the details of the distribution. But what we do know so far from the administration is that some of the supply will go to the stores. However, you can't just walk up to the counter and grab one and pay for it. You actually need a prescription. So I should go back a little bit and tell you that the shipment that came in, the 78,000 pounds of formula that came in over the weekend, it's a specialized formula. This is specifically for medically vulnerable children, children who can't digest cow milk protein.
Formula for moms and dads who have children who have allergies, where the regular formula just simply will not work.
This is a medically necessary formula that a lot of these parents have been waiting for a long time, even more so than the regular formula that everyone else is using. And so that is why the Department of Defense was able to use a military aircraft to expedite this process and bring this over. And what we're learning right now, according to the Department of Agriculture, is 9,000 babies and 18,000 toddlers can be fed on the shipment for just 1 week.
Oh, I see. So there are different formulas out there. The kind that was just airlifted is meant to deal with this very specific allergy. Like, this formula is not available. That kid might not be able to eat at all. But then you got other types of formula out there that lots of people use for a variety of other reasons. When does that problem get solved, Faith? Like, when are we anywhere close to being out of the woods?
Well, we heard from Secretary Vilsack, and he says that he expects this whole process, in his word, to abate, the shortage to abate within the next 30 days.
This is an important step, but it is by no means the only step that must take place. There's a second wave, if you will, a second delivery that's going to take place later this week.
You have Operation Fly Formula that is happening, in addition to several things the administration has been doing, including the fact that the president invoked the Defense Production Act.
The Defense Production Act gives the government the ability to require suppliers to direct needed resources to infant formula manufacturers before any other customer who may have ordered that good.
You also have an agreement, a consent agreement between the FDA and the Abbott facility in Michigan.
The FDA expects supply to continue to improve over the next couple of months.
They are going to be opening very soon. And so the Abbott CEO at this point is saying that they expect their plant to be back in operation by the end of June. They'll be able to have enough supply of formula for Americans than they had before that recall. That recall happened in February, and that means that they'll have more than what they had available to Americans in January.
Yeah, you had sort of worldwide supply shortages, which have been happening in a number of industries. Then you had this huge recall from Abbott that really put pressure on everything else. Abbott, by the way, now says they've got a $5 million fund for parents who are affected as they try to rapidly get back on schedule here. Faith Abube in Washington, so helpful. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Next up on Start Here, we were already looking over our shoulders. Now, do you seriously need to worry about monkeypox too? The strange spread after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Make no mistake, this COVID-19 surge is becoming more and more dangerous. Cases are up significantly. Hospitalizations have now risen over the last few weeks as well. We do know how COVID spreads. It's just a question of what officials and citizens will do to stop it. But there is another strange illness spreading right now. And unlike COVID, it's still unclear exactly why these case numbers are multiplying.
Mr. President, quick question. question. What have your health advisors told you your level of concern should be about monkeypox and the cases that are in the United States and around the world?
Well, they haven't told me the level of exposure yet, but it is something that everybody should be concerned about. We're working on it hard.
This now has the attention of the White House and of President Biden himself. Let's go to Sony Salzman with ABC's medical unit. Sony, what is monkeypox? Like, I was not worried about this until I looked at some pictures of it, and it scared the bejesus out of me. What are we talking about here?
Hi, Brad. So, yes, monkeypox. Monkeypox is a disease that is a cousin of smallpox and chickenpox, which are diseases that people may have heard of. It's an infection. It passes person to person. It is not as deadly as smallpox, which was eradicated from the planet in the 1980s. And it doesn't spread as readily either. So this is close person-to-person contact we're talking about, not spreading as easily as a virus like COVID-19.
The World Health Organization called an emergency meeting to discuss the recent outbreak of monkeypox.
There's probably been some hidden chains of transmission that could have occurred for quite a number of weeks.
The World Health Organization says that there are 80 confirmed cases worldwide and 50 suspected in countries where the virus doesn't normally circulate. Now, in North America, we know that there is a cluster of 17 at least cases in Montreal. And in here in the States, last week, we saw our first confirmed case in Massachusetts.
And this was really unusual because the patient had no travel history, no exposure to animals that would be known to be reservoirs.
And then there was a suspected case in New York, another suspected case in Florida.
Flu-like illness and other sort of very general fevers, chills, and an unexplained rash.
Monkeypox is a virus that does occur in low levels in Western and Central Africa. So, you know, epidemiologists, scientists, public health people have been monitoring it there. Occasionally, there are travel-related cases outside of that region in North America, in Europe, and elsewhere across the globe. Now, typically, those cases are quite limited. You know, it will be related to a traveler, potentially a little bit of spread. There was an outbreak in 2003 related to infected animals.
Kurt Zeski was a veterinarian in 2003 and came in contact with a prairie dog carrying the virus.
Within about 48 hours of my handling that specimen, I became ill.
But it snuffs out really quickly. Now, what's different and why people are monitoring this so closely is that there are clusters of people in North America and in Europe who are not related or are not connected to people who have recently had travel to that region, which is why people are monitoring it, because that indicates that the virus is spreading between people relatively undetected and that we may see even more cases.
And so how serious is that? Like, what are epidemiologists and disease doctors saying to each other about this?
Well, you know, the experts we spoke to, the resounding message is to not panic.
It's actually very similar to the way influenza spreads. So it travels on very large droplets, not necessarily in the air like COVID. And these droplets land before 6 feet, and you have to be in prolonged contact with the individual, much longer than 15 minutes. Some say, you know, more than several hours.
So it's not something that any of the experts that we've spoken to say is going to blossom into the next COVID or a major new outbreak. There probably will be more cases coming. More so, it's a curiosity. How did it spread undetected for so long when historically this is something that's been relatively contained?
You know, I think people just have to be curious, aware, but not terrified, not panicked, not change any plans or travel, etc.
We saw the White House talk about how this should be a concern to everyone. What will that concern look like? And what will the government do about it, I guess?
So right now, the concern is understanding exactly how widespread this is. So we have cases that are not directly related to travel. That means that there is some spread, which means there are some people probably walking around in the States, in Canada, countries in Europe, where other cases have been detected that could have monkeypox, and they just haven't been diagnosed yet, right? And so right now, what public health officials are laser focused on is understanding the scope of the spread. How many people have it? And, you know, how widespread is it? And then once they understand the scope, then they can trace the patterns of infection, start to contain it. People who are test positive, they have to isolate for a few weeks, and then they can stop it from spreading further. Another important thing to note here, Brad, is that This virus has been spreading amongst communities of men who have sex with men. And so public health officials right now, they are simultaneously trying to get the word out to those communities because we know it is spreading among men who have sex with men. So they're reaching out to public health clinics, making sure people are aware and watching out for that distinctive rash. But I want to be really clear that this is not a disease that affects one group of people. For example, one of the early cases in London was a cluster in a nuclear family, people who lived in the same home. So this is a virus that can affect anyone. But because we know it is popping up in this community, there's an extra effort to get the word out.
Right. And of course, lots of heightened vigilance because of what we've been through these last couple of years. But also when you hear health officials basically saying, listen, it's popping up in several countries, several states, and we don't see a clear connection between any of them, that means that there are more people walking around with it that have not been reported yet. And that seems to be one of the major concerns here. All right. Sony Salzman, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Yet again, there's another big Republican primary coming up this week. In Georgia, the race for governor is centering around the current governor, Republican Brian Kemp, and the former GOP senator, David Perdue. And while former President Trump features prominently in nearly every Republican race right now, he's a particularly big deal here. Because as much as he is a fan of David Perdue, he might despise Brian Kemp even more.
When Stacey Abrams says, I'm not going to concede, that's okay. No problem. Oh, she's not going to concede. She's not going to concede. Of course, having her, I think, might be better than having your existing governor.
Remember, it was Kemp who insisted the 2020 election results there were legitimate. It was Kemp who said flat out that Trump lost. And it was Kemp who stood by his Secretary of State counting the votes, who came under direct pressure from Trump to, quote, find more votes.
They could have asked for a recount. He's just out to blame other people. I'm not doing that.
And this continued insistence on the big lie, well, is not just a 2020 issue. In fact, it's no longer just about Republicans and Democrats. ABC's political director Rick Klein is here. And Rick, before we even get into this week, the biggest race of last week still hasn't even been decided yet, right? And we're still hearing talk about vote counting.
Yeah, and the talk is coming from Donald Trump. He is the only prominent Republican who's raising questions about mail-in votes in this race. His candidate, Dr. Mehmet Oz, is up by about 1,000 votes, with most of the votes counted, but there's still a good number of mail-in votes that that are arriving even from overseas, including military ballots.
Dr. Oz has led an enormously successful career on television, and now he's running to save our country.
Donald Trump wants to stop counting. He doesn't want those to count at all. So far, Dr. Oz's campaign has been playing it a little bit differently than Trump, certainly, by suggesting that they're open to seeing where the vote count lands. But there are disputes over other ballots, some of which that may have been improperly marked by people sending them in. That's opening another fissure inside the Republican Party. And the ironies in this one, Brad, are just so deep.
President Trump endorsed me because he said I was smart, tough, and I will never let you down.
Now we're talking, by definition, about Republican votes. They're all Republicans. It's a Republican primary.
We can see the path ahead. We can see victory ahead.
Dr. Oz's main opponent, Dave McCormick, has the backing of a lot of Trump fans, people like Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, Senator Ted Cruz. So this is Republican on Republican violence over the issue of vote integrity. In a lot of ways, it's the chickens coming home to roost in Pennsylvania.
Right. If you're a Republican who supported Trump's false claims in 2020, can you now seriously turn around and say, well, this is ludicrous this time. I did win my race here in 2022. President Trump's raising really scurrilous claims here.
Only because it's politics that someone could get away with that. Yes, Brad, we've seen President Trump, former president, suggest maybe that the attorney general, who's a Democrat and is now running for governor, has something to do with this. That's bogus. No one has produced any evidence to suggest any issues yet.
Election night has turned into an election, week. When you have to wait until election day to start touching, tens of thousands of ballots, it's going to take a while.
But we are looking at, Brad, a weeks-long recount process. And that's ugly. Those are always ugly, whatever you're talking about, inside a party, outside a party. When you've only got, maybe a couple hundred votes separating them, this is going to be trench warfare among Republican lawyers now for weeks just to settle who won the Republican primary. And yes, with the former president and many people that parrot his false claims about the election in 2020, they're going to be chirping from the sidelines.
Which always happens in close races, right? Like every vote, we've seen this before Donald Trump, like every vote becomes more and more closely scrutinized. People start raising questions. There are like political infights. But when you look at races on the whole, Rick, with this new era of saying without any evidence, oh, this was all rigged, these votes shouldn't be counted anymore, what will that mean going forward later this year or in future years?
Yeah, that's precisely the issue, Brad, is that you've got Republicans up and down the ballot in lots of big states, including just tomorrow. We've got the primaries in Georgia, but also Texas, Alabama, Arkansas. Every one of those states has people running for office, Republicans, who endorse the big lie. They say falsely that Donald Trump won or something was stolen from him.
We know it. And they know it.
Those individuals, many of them are going to be on the November ballots running for jobs where they would have some oversight over elections going forward. So when you start to undermine the integrity of an election based on false claims, you open a Pandora's box. You can imagine people that are governor or secretary of state or a senator or a congressman in 2024 or beyond almost automatically challenging the results and perhaps going and actually doing the things that Donald Trump wanted done last time. If suddenly you have a staunch ally in a secretary of state's office or an attorney general's office, you open up just an unbelievable can of worms for democracy going forward. And these are the people that are running, not just that they're putting their names forward, they're starting to win primaries. And I think we'll see a couple more this week.
Yeah, which has made this so interesting to watch people's reactions this time, because within the GOP, you are not seeing everyone line up behind Donald Trump this time and say, oh yeah, vote counting just shouldn't continue past a certain arbitrary date that the person in the lead wants to hear. That's not necessarily happening, not even so far in that race in Pennsylvania, but we'll see how tensions ratchet up there and how Trump's rhetoric has affected what happens next. All right, Rick Klein, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brad.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, the world's most famous clock just got a facelift. TikTok, one last thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. It's the world's most famous timekeeper, but for the last several years, it's been hidden from the public.
I've been over here for 3 years as ABC's foreign correspondent. I've never seen Big Ben without its scaffolding until now.
That's ABC's Maggie Rooley in London, who says, for the first time since 2017, Big Ben is back out in public view.
So it's a huge deal, about 5 years of restoration since 2017. It was an $100 million project.
Although, wait, I always get this wrong, I swear.
Wait, Ben is a bell?
Ben is a bell. Big Ben, the bell.
Okay. So then how do you refer to the big thing that you went up?
Well, if you're proper, it's called the Elizabeth Tower, named after the one and only Queen Elizabeth. It's also called the Great Clock. All right, we've got 334 steps to Big Ben. Come on.
And so as the Elizabeth Tower shows her face again, Maggie climbed every step.
We still have a ways to go.
And got to see up close the thing that now looks completely different. Well, two things, really.
And all this cast iron was cleaned, renovated on site. It's been repainted in the original color.
The clock hadn't been actually cleaned since its nearly 200-year history. And what you're going to notice is that formerly, the great clock's hands were black. But they discovered by scraping off paint that during the Victorian era, when it was built, it was actually a bright Prussian blue. So they repainted it sort of in all of its Victorian glory, and now it's a bright blue.
That's right. Those classic scenes of a foggy London with the clock tower looming up over it with those dark black hands. Well, now those hands will look brighter, and by the way, they'll sound clearer too.
Can you actually hear it ticking? Is this like a clock that actually ticks?
You can! Okay, this is what's so wild, because we got to go into the actual mechanics room.
That's the pendulum, which is ticking to and fro, and that regulates the overall mechanism to make sure we're on time.
The clock watchers on duty, that's right, they have engineers on call to make sure everything is correct to the millisecond. They say this clock is still better than anything since the dawn of electricity.
You know, I asked the head of the project what was more accurate, Big Ben or an iPhone. And he looks at me like I was crazy, and he's like, Big Ben, it is accurate down to the second, and it has been accurate for nearly 200 years, ma'am.
And not only have the clock mechanisms gotten a tune-up, but so has Big Ben himself, as in the bell, which is probably more special than you might think.
It was the only bell allowed to strike during the Second World War, so it became the voice of liberty and hope. And it was picked up in prison camps and by people in occupied countries all over Europe. And as long as they could hear Big Ben, they felt there was something to fight for. You know, they hadn't lost.
But here's what's crazy. Whenever you adjust a bell, there's a chance tiny differences could make it sound different. Still the same note, an E natural, by the way. But when Big Ben starts ringing again, people passing by might hear a slightly different cadence.
There was a longer period of time between the bells, and now it might be a shorter period of time between the bells. Yeah.
But it was 4.5 seconds between each one. And I hope it's going to be just about the same, because otherwise, if you had 12 in a row at midday, it's going to sound very, very different from what it used to.
At one point, I asked Maggie if they don't take Americans very seriously because of the whole Liberty Bell situation, like our most famous bell has a crack in it. Maggie reminds me, Big Ben has a crack in it too. So, you know, every 200 years or so, everyone needs a glow up once in a while. Start here tomorrow. Just hit that follow button for a new episode every day. I'm Brad Milkey. See you then.